Ceiling is beige, too. There's nothing on the walls. Nothing to orient you. Nothing familiar at all. The sharp, tangy aroma of bleach fills your nose, but it can't mask the odor beneath it. If despair had a smell, it would smell like this room. You have a good nose, a sommelier told you only a few nights ago, back when your life was your own, after he decanted a $100 bottle of wine and you identified notes of leather and blackberry. You feel too weak to stand up, but something deep within you is screaming at you to try. Then you realize your arms are cuffed to the sides of the bed. So are your legs. You're splayed out, completely helpless beneath bright green paper pajamas. You strain as hard as you can, but the Velcro cuffs, red bands for your wrists and blue for your ankles, don't yield.
Help,
you croak, in a voice that sounds nothing like your own. You try to swallow, but your mouth is too dry. Then you hear something that makes you wish you'd stayed silent. A man's voice.
You're awake.
Your heart shudders as you glimpse him seated on a plastic chair down by your feet. He wears burgundy scrubs and a somber expression. When you see his face, it all comes rushing back to you, a tsunami of memories, sending terror spiking through your veins. You remember why you were here. And you know no matter what you say or do, you will not be allowed to leave. You are no longer Georgia Cartwright, a 32-year-old woman with a job as a high-end wedding planner, a city apartment with a wall of windows, a weakness for ugly dogs, and a love of running. From this day forward, you are the newest resident of the locked ward. Chapter 2. Mandy.
It's the crime of the decade! The early morning headline explodes across my iPhone as I scan it through bleary eyes. I read the first few paragraphs. A woman from a wealthy, socially prominent family is accused of bludgeoning her younger sister to death at the family estate in Charlotte, North Carolina, just 90 minutes away from my one-bedroom apartment, but essentially in another world. Pathological jealousy is the presumed motive. Then I scroll through more updates involving war, famine, and the breakup of my favorite celebrity couple. I recently made a resolution to avoid checking social media first thing in the morning because it supposedly causes depression. I'm not sure the news is any better. I stretch my arms above my head, then reluctantly pull myself out of bed. One of my employees took last night off, so work was especially hectic. At least I was filling in for my bartender, Scott, instead of the short-order cook. I'd rather pull beers and mix Jack and Cokes than stand over a deep fryer any day of the week. I step into my bathroom and twist the knob for hot water in my shower, then hesitate. I thought I heard a faint noise in the distance, just before it was muffled by the sound of rushing water. I listen hard and hear it again, the bright music of my phone's ringtone. Everyone in my life knows I work nights and not to call before 10 a.m., which it isn't even close to now. It could be spam, but something is urging me to turn off the shower and walk back into my bedroom. My phone is on my nightstand, flashing the words, "private caller." Probably a salesperson, I tell myself. But some deep-seated instinct overrides my logical brain, pressing me to answer.
Amanda Ravenel?
The man's voice is raspy and urgent. Who's asking? I counter.
My name is Milt Daniels. I'm the public defender representing Georgia Cartwright.
My mind reels. It's the case I just read about, the one with the insanely jealous sister.
Ms. Ravenel?
The man repeats. My throat is bone dry. If it weren't for the hard, smooth feeling of my phone in my hand, I'd assume I was dreaming. I'm still here,